San Bernardino, California, at North Park Elementary School. Two adults have been killed and at least two students have been injured in what the city's police and sheriff's department describe as a murder-suicide. It all happened Monday morning inside a classroom where police responded within minutes.
Wells Fargo laying the blame Monday for the scandal that cost the bank its sterling reputation on Carrie Tolstead, once hailed by her boss as, quote, the best banker in America. According to the findings of an internal investigation released Monday, Tolstead was responsible for overly aggressive sales tactics, resulting in the opening of more than 2 million bogus accounts and for going to great lengths to keep the scandal hidden, even from the board. She will lose $47 million in stock options, while her boss, the former CEO, will forfeit $28 million.
United CEO not doing his company any favors with this statement, which didn't even acknowledge the violent nature of the removal, only apologizing for having to, quote, re-accommodate the customers. United says it offered compensation to the passenger who claimed to be a doctor trying to get home to his patients. Later on Monday, video appeared on social media showing the man bloodied and battered, and somehow back on the plane repeating, I have to get home.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Tuesday. It's April 11th, 2017, 5:10 in the morning. Glad to have you along for another edition of The Opening Bell, another business day. Lots to cover this morning. We'll get to some of the news of the day and the markets in a second. A little bit later in the program, we'll be talking with the director of the Illinois chapter of the Sierra Club. Chicago's going to be making buildings 100% using 100% renewable energy by 2025. We'll talk about the impact to the local economy of that and about this move, why it is happening, and the benefits of it a little bit later in the program in our second segment. Coming up in just a few seconds, we'll talk more about North Korea and its impact on investors today. But on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning, Dow futures are tepid again this morning as investors remain wary of the intentions and tensions in North Korea and involving North Korea around the globe this morning. Investors seem to be on the sidelines as they wait to see what transpires. The Dow futures are off 4 points. NASDAQ and S&P futures are lower. Crude oil is trading at about $53 a barrel. In Asia this morning, most of the indices are off, with the Hang Seng leading the way, almost off 173 points, followed by the Nikkei off about 50 points. In Europe, mixed situation this morning. The FTSE's higher. Most everything else is lower. Again, futures are pointing toward a weak open on Wall Street later on this morning. North Korea says there could be catastrophic consequences after the U.S. ordered the USS Carl Vinson aircraft carrier and its battle group to the waters off the Korean Peninsula. Tensions already high with U.S. South Korea war games underway following a recent ballistic missile launches by the North that have rattled neighboring countries. Nervous investors mainly turn to safe havens of gold and government bonds again today, as well as the yen, as those concerns mounted. That's where we'll begin this morning. Ivan Eland is a senior fellow and director on peace and liberty at the Independent Institute, and he's written a lot about this. He's an expert on North Korea. Ivan, good morning. Welcome to the Opening Bell.
Thanks for having me on.
You've heard the headline there this morning. Again, North Korea rattling the fences again. We heard the Chinese president and the American president last week talk about how they want to work together to possibly defuse the situation. What are their options?
Well, I think when you see China say that, you have to take it a little bit with a grain of salt. They keep saying that. Now, they have put on some sanctions, economic sanctions, because they're responsible for like a lot of trade and a lot of energy that goes into North Korea, and it's their main ally. But they have a problem in that they don't want the regime to collapse. They don't want a lot of refugees flowing across their border, so they're reluctant to put too much pressure on them, even though they have in recent – I think they are really nervous about North Korea's nuclear program, and they're nervous about what the leader is, because the leader is even more erratic than his father and his grandfather, and they are very erratic themselves. But the other problem that China has is that if the regime collapses, they fear another Germany-type situation where it gets reunified under U.S. Security umbrella, and they don't want bases right on their border. As we remember in the Korean War, when the U.S. troops got too close to the Yalu River, the border there, the Chinese invaded in mass and pushed the Americans back to the, to the further south. So I think there is a very secure, there's a security sensitivity, and then there's also the refugee sensitivity. So there are things that are making China, they say they'll do a lot more, but sometimes they don't come through.
Yeah, I suppose listening to the Chinese president and Donald Trump talk about this last week, it almost sounds like China has some ability to pressure North Korea. Am I hearing from you that really is not the case?
No, they do, but they're reluctant to do it because they don't want the regime to collapse for the reasons that I've just mentioned. They have a border, a common border with North Korea, and most of the trade flows go through there. And so they're a big trading partner. They're like North Korea's big brother. And I think one of the reasons that Trump did the cruise missile attack against Syria was to show China, hey, you need to pressure your client. We're going to do the same to North Korea, because the situation is analogous. Russia has its client in Syria that's misbehaving, and China has its client in North Korea, which is misbehaving as well. However, the problem with Trump's gambit there is that North Korea already has nuclear weapons, and Syria doesn't have nuclear weapons, and that's a big difference. So I think North Korea realizes that the U.S. treats it more gingerly since it has these nuclear weapons, and that's why it says that it still keeps working on them to get more a missile that'll hit the United States, because it's scared that the U.S. will do the same thing it did to Saddam Hussein, Muammar Gaddafi, Milosevic in Serbia, etc.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Stocks drifted between small losses and small gains yesterday. The Dow Jones finally closing 1 point higher at 20,658. The S&P 500 was also ahead by 1 point at the close. The NASDAQ was up by 3. Federal Reserve Chair Janet Yellen says the Fed is moving close to achieving its goals on employment and inflation. Analysts see her remarks as providing support for gradual increases in interest rates the rest of this year. U.S. airlines are hearing fewer customer complaints about delays, canceled flights, and lost luggage. That's according to an annual study by Wichita State and Embry-Riddle Aeronautical Universities. And New York has become the first state to offer free college tuition to middle-class students. But there is a catch. Students will have to remain in New York after graduation for as many years as they receive free tuition, or repay the money as a loan if they take a job in another state. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program. Glad to have you along. We're talking about North Korea today and the options available to the U.S. and its allies where that is concerned. Ivan Eland is a senior fellow and director on peace and liberty at the Independent Institute. Ivan, before the break, we were talking about some of the generalities of this. I'd like to get into some of the nitty-gritty. What options in terms of military, and I know people don't like to talk about that, but if it were to come to a shooting war with North Korea, how would we handle that?
Well, I think very, very gingerly. I mean, they do have nuclear weapons already, and they're working on more in the missiles, and that's the problem. But they still having a nuclear power makes the U.S. treat them much different, more differently than Muammar Gaddafi or Saddam Hussein. And the rest of it, they have seen that, and that's why they're redoubling their efforts to get nuclear weapons. They're the only thing that they think keeps the U.S. from, taking them out. There are other things that probably do so. The North Korea is unfortunately only 35 miles from the capital, Seoul. So the U.S. attacked North Korea with even a punitive strike like they did with Syria the other day with cruise missiles. You have the potential for the North Koreans to start shelling Seoul. And the North Koreans have very cagily over the years developed a lot of artillery, so they can just lob shells, from their side of the border over into Seoul. So that's a big deterrent from the U.S. doing that. The two sides usually, they do exercises on our side, and they send battle groups. I was in the South China Sea about a year ago. There was a U.S. battle group there. Now it's they're taking it further north into North Korea. So we do keep battle groups in that area, but this one's going up to North Korea to get as a show of force. But then, of course, that motivates North Korea to do something like launch a missile, or perhaps they're getting, and I think everybody thinks they're getting ready for another nuclear test. So it's usually tit for tat. So, well, what do you do? I think Trump is absolutely right that the way to work this is through China. The problem is you have to give China some incentives to cooperate with it, either pledge to help refugees, which is Trump. Trump is very against that in the Syrian thing, and he's very against that, period. So that kind of rules that one out. But the other thing you could do, the Chinese have suggested a suspension of the North Korean nuclear program for a suspension of U.S.-South Korean exercises. That might be worth looking at. The problem that we've had in the past is that North Korea tends to cheat on its agreements. Bill Clinton got an agreement during the 1990s, that where North Korea was supposed to get rid of its nuclear program. And, of course, it didn't. It cheated on it. And so we have to be very careful about any agreement that we reach. I think China is the way to go. I think we need to keep them ratcheting up sanctions against North Korea. And I think the Chinese are getting more and more nervous about North Korea and its nuclear weapons, that there's going to be a war. So hopefully we can play on that and get the Chinese to do more, because that's really their big ally. And they sort of try to be independent of China, but China really has a lot of sway over them, since most of the key commodities go over that border. And of course, before the Chinese cut it off, the North Koreans also exported through that border things like coal, et cetera.
You mentioned earlier that North Korea had reneged on that Clinton agreement way back when. It brings up this next point. I've heard over recent days that some people are suggesting maybe we negotiate or try to do some diplomatic thing directly with North Korea. Would that even work, and could we even trust them?
Well, of course, we had the six-party talks, which involved North Korea before, and that never seemed to work. Obama kind of moved away from that. He was trying to do a policy of strategic patience, whereby we just tried to ignore North Korea and, you know, hope that sanctions would have an effect. But that really didn't work, although there is something to the policy, because North Korea is sort of like a child, and that if you ignore it initially, they'll try to do even worse things to get your attention, but then they'll realize that's not going to work if you keep to the policy. So that's also a possibility if we stick with it. And you know, but Tillerson, Rex Tillerson, the Secretary of State, said the strategic era of strategic patience is over. So I think, you know, they're going to have to do something else. But I really think that what the major policy that we need to change is the fact that we've always tried to do these negotiations, as you mentioned, to get them to get rid of the missile and nuclear programs. And they're just paranoid. And there's some, unfortunately, there's some kernel reality to their paranoia, because the U.S. has taken out regimes. In fact, they took out Obama took out the Gaddafi regime even after he gave up his nuclear and chemical weapons programs and that sort of thing. So that was a very bad signal to the rest of the world, and I think North Korea and Iran at the time. So you know, the problem that we have is, I think we're just going to have to move to a policy of deterrence. But that has worked for us for decades against the Soviet Union, Maoist China, some pretty radical regimes, because we can wipe them off the face of the earth. And we have the most potent nuclear arsenal on the planet. He's only going to have a few weapons, and he can barely get them to the U.S. And he can't get them to the U.S. now, but even when he gets you know, a little bit more advanced in 4 to 10 years, he may be able to get a weapon here, but will it be reliable, et cetera. So I think we have he has a small country. We're a big country. We have a lot more nuclear weapons than he does. We have thousands. He'll have a few. So I think deterrence will still work. Dictators, the main thing they want to do, even nutty ones like him, is stay in power. So the deterrence can work. And I think many experts now think that, we're going to have to move to deterrence because there's just no way he's going to negotiate his missile and nuclear programs.
We have about 30 seconds here, Ivan, but some people are saying that the strike in Syria was as much a signal to North Korea as it was to Syria. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I think, well, that was part of it, yes. But I think, as I mentioned before, it's a whole different can of worms. The North Koreans may be laughing at that because they know they have nuclear weapons already. They may have a plan to smuggle a nuclear weapon out somewhere. They can't get to the U.S., or they could just use it in a short-range missile or some other way and smuggle it out and take it to Japan or South Korea or whatever. So they know they'll be treated differently than Syria because they have these nuclear weapons. So it was a signal, I think, but I don't think it is going to have much effect on North Korea.
Ivan Eland is a senior fellow and director on peace and liberty at the Independent Institute. Ivan, thanks for being with us this morning.
Thanks for having me on.
From ABC News, tech trends. Could light rays be the key to ultra-fast Wi-Fi? When it comes to wireless connectivity, a dissertation written by a PhD student in the Netherlands proposes a potentially groundbreaking idea using harmless infrared light rays.
We're theoretically talking about more than 40 gigabits per second per light ray, as opposed to 1 gigabit per second on even the most state-of-the-art Wi-Fi standard.
Dana Wollman with the tech blog Engadget says with an infrared-based system, there's no need to share the signal since every device gets its own ray of light.
Wi-Fi already offers very fast theoretical speeds, but in this case, either less or even no interference.
And no moving parts means a system like this wouldn't require a lot of power. The downside? Infrared signals can't travel through walls, so light antennas would have to be placed in each room. Experts say it could be 5 years or more before we see this new technology come to market. With Tech Trends, I'm Chuck Sievertson, ABC News.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program, our Tuesday edition of The Opening Bell. Glad to have you here. On Sunday, Mayor Emanuel was on top of the Shedd Aquarium to announce that the city is transforming the way buildings and operations are done with a switch to 100% clean and renewable energy by 2025. Joining us to talk about this morning is Jack Darren. He's the Illinois Chapter Director of the Sierra Club. Good morning, Jack. Welcome to The Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Well, this was kind of cool. First of all, to see the mayor on the roof of the Shedd Aquarium was nice, but the announcement was even bigger, wasn't it? Tell us about this.
Yeah, this is really an historic step towards bringing the clean energy economy fully into our city. The city does have some renewable energy already atop some schools and police and fire stations, but by committing to repower every single city and park and school and city college building to 100% clean energy, that's a real great step, not only for our air, but also for creating business opportunities in every neighborhood in the city.
How is this going to happen? It seems like, as you mentioned, it's a wonderful thing, but what are the nuts and bolts of this? How expensive is this going to be? How hard is this rollout going to be?
I think the rollout will happen in different ways. Yes, you will definitely see some new solar and perhaps wind projects popping up throughout the city in the years to come. You'll also see the city probably enter into contracts with renewable energy projects outside the city, where there's been a lot of growth in wind energy in downstate Illinois, for example. So I think it'll be a mix of ways that the city meets this goal, but it's a great goal not only for economic opportunities, but also for cleaner air for Chicago.
This announcement comes on the heels of what we're seeing in Washington and really the Trump administration's suggestion and movement to get rid of the Clean Power Plan on a national level. Was the timing of this a coincidence or no?
Well, I think that it certainly does come at a good time when, unfortunately, the Trump administration does seem to be doing everything in their power to reverse the progress that we've made away from fossil fuels toward a clean energy economy in recent years. We saw just 10 days ago the president erased America's Clean Power Plan, which is designed to do just that, to reduce carbon emissions by bringing wind and solar online. So that's a real problem for our country, obviously, and for the world. But at least here in Chicago, we're going to keep moving forward and not backward.
And it's interesting to see that happen, too, because from a financial standpoint, we're seeing more and more evidence, both on paper and in real life, that these clean energy initiatives are actually making money for people that invest in them. And they're creating more jobs than, let's say, coal power plants, are they not?
Absolutely. The solar economy now is a bigger employer than coal in the state of Illinois, and we historically were a coal state. Jobs and energy efficiency even outnumber those. There are more people working in energy conservation in Illinois right now than there are accountants, for example. It's a real fast-growing sector. And obviously, there are many parts of Chicago that are desperately in need of those kinds of jobs and economic opportunities. And our hope would be that this would be done in a way that would provide those opportunities and job training opportunities to the neighborhoods and the people that need them most.
How has the Sierra groups like the Sierra Club been trying to reach out to the Trump administration to get them to reverse course on this? And are they listening at all to any of the voices, even some of them coming from industries like the coal industry, saying, hey, wait a second, we kind of like these other plans?
We haven't seen a lot of openness. I wish I could report differently. We have seen largely a door that's been shut so far. We have a new head of the Environmental Protection Agency in Scott Pruitt, who his previous job as Attorney General of Oklahoma was suing the EPA to try to stop them from doing things like the Clean Power Plan. So we really are troubled about where we're headed in terms of Washington in the years ahead, and that's why local leadership like this has never been more important.
Groups like the Sierra Club do a wonderful work in terms of raising the awareness about some of these things. You're on the ground also, and I'm guessing you're probably in the courtrooms too. Is there a legal challenge to any of this rollback of the Clean Power Plan in the works, and how long would it take to unravel that plan going forward?
Well, the Supreme Court has said that the EPA does have an obligation to regulate carbon emissions. So eventually, the Trump administration will have to do something. This, unlike health care, this won't supposedly be repeal and replace. This has to be repeal. The problem is we know that's not going to happen quickly, and the scientists are telling we have no time to waste to make deep cuts in the pollution from fossil fuels before climate change really gets thoroughly out of control. And that's why it's so critical that we start moving forward here in Chicago and Illinois and go forward where Washington steps back.
Let's talk back. Let's go back to the Chicago renewable plan here, the renewable energy. So what is this going to look like, Jack? Are we going to see more solar panels on buildings or windmills or a mix of both? Or how will this look going forward?
I think a mix of both. Solar is such a great application for a city like Chicago, where we have not only rooftops that could be producing pollution-free power, but also brownfields, previously contaminated sites that you can't really build anything on now, could be a home to large solar arrays. So there's a lot of opportunity for solar. Wind is better suited to places where you have lots of open space. So you might see a mix of purchasing power from windmills in central Illinois, as an example.
Yeah, no, if you drive down Interstate 57, as soon as you get to around Champaign, right before Champaign, there's a huge area of windmills down there. Have we ever thought about doing that in Lake Michigan or in the waterways close to Chicago?
We have actually thought about in Lake Michigan. There are proposals for offshore wind in several locations in the Great Lakes, and Chicago is a very compelling one because the wind... we are the windy city, but the wind is even stronger and more sustained out over the lake, and it's very close to load. Big problem in energy is producing it far away, like at our downstate nuclear and coal plants primarily. A lot of wires between us and them, but offshore the wind is right here next to all of us who use the power. There's a lot of wind out there, so I do think in the years to come, that's a real exciting opportunity for Chicago.
Jack, are you optimistic or pessimistic about the future where this is concerned? I know you mentioned the climate change efforts earlier. It's as somebody who loves the environment, it's really sad to see the headlines this week about the Great Barrier Reef being completely, almost completely bleached and other efforts of things happening around the world. Are you optimistic that we're going to be able to do something in time, or is it too late?
You know, I guess what keeps you going is seeing how people respond to news like that, to news like we're hearing out of Washington in these recent months. And the good news is that we have seen people come out of the woodwork from every neighborhood in Chicago and around the area to events to either resist things that are happening in Washington or doing great things in our community. Like, we're going to be out cleaning up Montrose Beach on Earth Day, April 22nd, and we expect hundreds of people to come out because they do want to do their part, whether you're an everyday average citizen in Chicago who wants to get involved, or whether you're the mayor and the city agencies who are going to switch to 100% clean energy.
Yeah, and regardless of how you feel about this, if you're listening out there, if you're an investor, all signs point to making money if you invest in some of these clean energy trends. There's money to be made there, isn't there?
Absolutely. This is a very powerful global economic trend away from dirty sources of energy to clean. And so it is not going to be easy and probably not possible for the Trump administration just because they're doing the bidding of a few fossil fuel industry leaders. They have a lot that they are up against if they want to go back to the days where we focused on coal and focused on fossils. So our hope is that they will fail in that attempt and that the nation will follow examples like the one that Chicago is setting this week.
Jack, good of you to be with us in the opening bell. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Jack Darin is the Illinois Chapter Director of the Sierra Club.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Good morning. Welcome back to the program on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk this morning. Dow futures are trying to find direction. U.S. stock futures, that is. They have been flat to negative now at the big goose egg. Dow futures flat. S&P futures off just about a half of a percent. The crude oil listing this morning at $53 a barrel. Gold and silver are trading higher this morning. A couple of stories we're following for you with stock there and the United story still front and center. United stock set to fall 5% and wipe almost $1 billion off the airline's market cap if things hold where they are now. Within the last hour or so, shares in United Continental Holdings have started falling about 5% now in pre-market trade as the airline continues to draw flak for having a passenger forcibly dragged off of a plane. Video of the incident and all of the comments on social media are at viral level. United yesterday actually gained about 1%, but this morning again it's off about 5% as we head toward the opening bell. Federal regulators are thinking about maintaining the ban on in-flight cellular calls. The Federal Communications Commission is looking to kill an effort it started in 2013 to give airlines the option of installing onboard cellular equipment for calls and other services. The FCC chairman appears to have enough votes to axe the plan, which he considers ill-conceived. A couple of other things we'll look out for this week. The first on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for this Tuesday, April 11th. Not much going on today in terms of big economic reports. We'll be watching the Labor Department as it releases its job openings and labor turnover survey for February. As we look for the rest of the week, tomorrow could be a busy day. Delta Airlines reports its quarterly financial results. The Treasury holds its releases its federal budget for March. And then on Thursday, we'll see weekly jobless claims, mortgage release in terms of mortgage rates from Freddie Mac. J.P. Morgan will report of its results before the market opens. Friday, stock and bond markets will be closed for the Good Friday holiday. Just some of the things that could move the markets today and the rest of the week as we move toward the opening bell this morning.